good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is 2-2-2-2-2.
That was good.
Did you like that?
2-2-2-2-2.
2-2-2-2. Woohoo. February 22nd, 2022. 2-2-2.
That won't happen for another 400 years.
400? What? 400 years?
Yeah, that's what I read today.
What will it be then? What will it be then?
Tuesday, Tuesday, February 22nd, 2422.
Oh, we're keeping with the 2-2 theme. Oh.
Yes.
2-2-2-2-2. 400 years, huh?
I bet that.
Well, just think, in 400 years, when there's a radio person talking about 2-2-2-2-2, they'll say, this hasn't happened for 400 years. It's been 400 years since that has happened, and they'll be talking about us. How about
that? There you go. I hope they mention us by name.
Yeah, they'll say, that was when we lived down on Earth. We're up now here in Mars.
Oh, my word.
About it. Flying around in our flying automobiles and
our driverless jets and mobiles.
Yes. In 400 years, I can imagine all things are possible. But anyway, what will gold be doing in 400 years?
Oh man, maybe by then it will have hit 10,000 an ounce.
Well, I'm sure it will. Hey, it's been around for how many thousands of years already? So 400 years is just a blink of the eye. Twinkle of the eye, blink of the eye. So
true.
But gold today didn't do bad considering what it could have done. It's still down a couple bucks. It struggled all day. We had a high of 1908. We're currently at 1901. Down a couple bucks. Silver's down, or I should say is up 21 cents at $24.23. Platinum was up $2 at $1,087. Palladium was down $37 at $2,443. The USDX today was down 0.06 at 96.07. Crude oil was up $1 at 92.27. Paper markets today had a little bit of a rough day, but off the lows. The Dow was down 480 at 33,596. S&P was down 44, 4,304. NASDAQ was down 166 at 13,381. Asian markets were negative, of course. It's amazing. The FTSE was positive by 10 points when everything else was down, but European markets were just down barely, just a fraction. So 10-year yield, what's that? 1.92%. 1.92% on the 10-year yield. So we had the Dow fall for a fourth straight session. All this based on the Russia and Ukraine conflict. And I can go any which direction. But there was another person out there, Dave, that sees gold trading at over $7,000. But I think he's a little off in his time frame. He says 5 years, but I think we'll see it a lot sooner than that. He thinks that it'll hit $2,700 an ounce by the end of the year, and then up to the $7,400. After that, he thinks that we're coming into a pretty major super cycle in precious metals. And he thinks if we started back in 2019, and this is about a 5-year cycle for gold. He added, when the stock markets get to the late stages, this is where we see commodities come to life. He also predicted that commodities and gold are set to outperform the broad equity index this year. If the stock markets chop sideways and slowly grind lower, that's the perfect scenario for precious metals. When the dollar index has traditionally held an inverse correlation to gold, in the last 3 weeks, the dollar index has rallied concurrently with gold, and he continues to see this trend.
Well, we know that gold is popular all around the world. The price of gold in Japan rose to an all-time high yesterday, driven by what analysts say is a combination of geopolitical risk, i.e. Russia-Ukraine, and worries over a weakening yen. Gold futures on the Osaka Exchange touched 7,041 yen. That's per gram. That's equivalent to about 1726 an ounce before it gave back a little bit of the gains on profit-taking. Now, concerns over rising inflation worldwide have created a tailwind for gold, but unlike the last time it set a price record in Japan anyway, about 18 months ago, dollar-denominated New York gold futures are still hovering below their all-time high, which we expect will be reached in the coming, well, certainly weeks. This divergence reflects the yen's waning strength relative to the dollar, now at a roughly 50-year low in terms of its real effective exchange rate. One Japanese gold analyst said, even among young people, you are seeing investment in gold to avoid the risk of holding only yen assets, another fiat currency, out of concern about being able to maintain purchasing power into retirement. That's some forward thinking there by those young folks, Melody.
Yes, it is.
Now, compare at the end of July 2020, before gold hit its last high, the value of the dollar has risen by 4% against gold, while the yen has fallen by 4%. Looks like it could be an interesting 2022, Melody.
2-2-2-2-2. Yes, it does. Anyway, every year is interesting, I believe, in today's world. I mean, the things are constantly changing, and we see all the oddities that are happening, and we're just seeing so many bad things too. There's good, and we try to bring them to you on this program. And just like with Dave's happy sweet potato day, there you go.
That's right. Hey, yeah. More importantly, happy margarita day.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm pretty partial to sweet potatoes, so
they are good.
Yes, they are. Well, you know, this conflict between Russia and Ukraine, and finally, the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz announced today that the certification process for the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is going to be immediately halted, saying that the situation has fundamentally changed after the Kremlin had ordered troops into eastern Ukraine. It's interesting because they held off for so long. It's a $10 billion Russia to Germany natural gas pipeline, which Scholz had long resisted naming as a potential sanction. Ukraine views the Putin-backed project as a threat to its security, as it would deprive the country of billions of dollars in gas transit fees and allows Russia to deliver gas directly to the heart of Europe. So, is this what's really behind it all? The U.S. has long led the position that Nord Stream 2 is maligned Kremlin geopolitical influence project that would increase Europe's reliance, of course, on their gas. Biden allowed construction to proceed last year in order to repair relations with Germany. And so not sure how well that's going, but we'll see, Dave.
Well, it's interesting. I just read an article before the program started about Ukraine's natural resources. And it turns out that Ukraine is a major world player when it comes to a number of mineral deposits, energy related mineral deposits and reserves. And in terms of what you just alluded to about, is that the real reason? Well, I'll tell you what, you certainly can't count out some of the underlying factors like that, perhaps, could have honed Pope Putin's interests besides his supposedly ideologically historical heart, I guess you can say, for Ukraine, in terms of how it fits into, shall we say, old Russia. Now, Dmitry Medvedev, who was Russia's former president, prime minister, now serves on Putin's Security Council, said, "Welcome to the brave new world where Europeans are very soon going to pay €2 for a cubic meter of natural gas." They're obviously alluding to the Nord Stream pipeline, which for now anyway looks like it is not going to be coming to the Western European area. So
does he mean it's going up because they're not going to be getting the?
No, I think this was meant to. €2 for a cubic meter of gas. You know, I honestly don't know. I just had assumed that that meant that was a great price.
Well, yeah, but if you just said it yesterday, knowing that they were going to shut off the pipeline, I would think that it means that.
Well, he didn't know yesterday though they were going to do that. So that's why I'm. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of confused there, but
those Russians.
Oh, I'm telling you, the misinformation. Biden, earlier this afternoon, in announcing some new sanctions, did actually characterize these latest Russian actions as a new invasion. As of last night, even they weren't quite sure. U.S. officials weren't quite sure how to refer to it because, I guess, the feeling being that Russia has had some troops in Eastern European, especially in the Russian-held separatist territories that Putin is now claiming as Russia's own independent states, along with Crimea. So.
Well, I kind of think that I would think that this is kind of like a game of chicken with this pipeline, because the thing of it is they will have to pay more, I would guess, from where they're going to have to get it, or they wouldn't have had interest of getting it from Russia to begin with, right? I mean, the excitement would be, you know, paying a lower price and so forth. So now they're going to have to pay a higher price. So how much longer are the Germany willing to pay a higher price? So, and thinking that this is going to push Putin out sooner than later. So it really is kind of like a game of chicken, right, when it comes to the pipeline. Not so much maybe with the sanctions, but I would
well,
think
certainly,
this pipeline.
Yeah, I mean, certainly halting Nord Stream and not accepting any gas beside what's coming out of Putin's mouth is, it's going to cost Russian coffers billions of dollars a year in revenue. So,
but Germany's going to have to pay a whole lot more too.
Well, if they eventually begin accepting it, is the question, or will this? You're right. I mean, if they don't get they'll have to look for other.
Sources.
So presumably, yeah, it would be higher than they would have gotten through Nord Stream.
So by cutting off the pipeline, it's going to hurt Europe and Germany in particular. It's going to hurt them also, I would think.
Yeah. Morality comes with a price, I guess. Sometimes it's sort of a darned if you do, darned if you don't proposition in this case.
And it is truly amazing with everything that's going on that consumer confidence only declined modestly this month. And it still remains relatively high. And the conference board said today that its consumer confidence index, which takes into account consumers' assessment of current conditions and their outlook for the future, only ticked slightly down to 110 from 111 in January. The conference board's present situation index, which measures consumers' assessment of current businesses and their labor conditions, it did rise slightly this month to 145 from 144 in January. So, you know, again, another report from their numbers where it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, because you would think at 110, people are still pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, the concerns about inflation did rise earlier in the month after declining the previous 2 months, and the proportion of people planning to purchase homes, automobiles, and major appliances over the next 6 months all fell. However, in the U.S., consumer confidence remains curiously high, despite surging prices for virtually everything, and with all these geopolitical threats rising all over the world. So I don't know how you count it. Retail sales jumped almost 4% in January over December, a lot bigger than economists had expected.
But that's also with inflation on those sales numbers too, right?
Yeah, I don't know how they're adjusted. If they're adjusted, I forget about that, how inflation plays into that number. This article suggests that they do.
Well, you know they do. If it juices it and makes it look better than what it is, you know they're going to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how all numbers are. That's how these numbers are produced anymore.
Yeah.
You got the think tank thinking, well, how can we do this? Let's see. Here's the real number. How can we make that look nicer? But anyway.
Anyhow.
Growth of the private sector output in the U.S. had gained a little momentum so far in February as companies reported recovery. Economic activity in the manufacturing sector continued to expand at a faster pace than it did in January. That's good news. Where did it go? It rose to a preliminary 57.5 from 55.5. And, of course, we know anything over 50 is good. I hear the music. We'll be returning. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We're going to talk about this information here in just a little bit, but we were talking about it during the break about almost two-thirds of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. No, not that one. Majority of unemployed men in their 30s have criminal records. It's interesting. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you visit our website. And despite billions of dollars in rental assistance, evictions still persist. $46.5 billion in emergency rental assistance program has been paid out. Tens of billions of dollars to help avert an eviction crisis. Some tenants who received help are finding themselves threatened with eviction again. Sometimes only days. How does this work? Sometimes only days after getting federal help. In fact, many of them are just finding it nearly impossible to find another affordable place to live. I mean, we've been talking about, you know, affordable housing for 20 years. There is none in this country. That's a sad thing. This country needs affordable living. There's no place, there's no affordable housing in this country. It was never envisioned as anything more than a Band-Aid. This is according to Aaron Willoughby, director of the Clayton Housing Legal Resource Center in Atlanta. It's not solving the underlying problem, which is a lack of affordable. Oh, I didn't read this sentence before, which is a lack of affordable housing. See, she agrees. People are on the hook for rents they cannot afford to pay. Simply finding something cheaper is not an option because there is not anything cheaper. People have to be housed somewhere. And if you can't be housed somewhere, you end up going to California living on the streets. The National Housing Law Project, in a survey last fall, found that 86% of respondents reported cases where landlords either refused to take assistance or accept the money and still moved to evict the tenants. I don't know if I buy that. 86%?
That's a lot.
That said the landlords would refuse to take assistance. Why would they do that?
Well,
or accept the money? Unless you're only getting a certain percentage of the money and you want it all.
Well, it's not that 86% refuse to take assistance. I believe it's 86% of landlords who did refuse to take assistance or accepted the money still moved to evict tenants.
That's a lot, though.
It sure is a lot.
And the survey also found a significant increase in cases of landlords lying in court to evict tenants and illegally locking them out. But a lot of these tenants had almost 2 years of living, maybe not 2 years, but a year and a half, living rent-free.
In some cases, yeah, certainly subsidized.
Yeah, a lot of cases.
Yeah. The National Apartment Association president, Bob Pinniger, said the survey wasn't fact-based, saying its members are doing everything they can to keep tenants in their homes, including lobbying to get rental assistance out faster. Legal aid attorneys interviewed across the country confirmed they're seeing a steady increase in cases where tenants were approved for rental help and still are facing eviction. There have also been cases reported in Georgia and Texas, not sure how plentiful they are, where landlords who received assistance moved to end leases early, increased rents to unaffordable levels to get other tenants in there who could afford them, or found other reasons than non-payment to evict somebody. It's still difficult in most, not all, but in most states to evict a tenant quickly and certainly without expense. So you wonder what some of the facts are behind these scenes. As you know, we've been talking about over the last 2 years, this area has been a double-edged sword. For the particularly the poorer and at times unemployed tenants, who maybe at one time could afford and were paying rents on time, but then fell behind. And yet, on the other hand, you got many of these landladies not getting paid their rent to pay mortgages on that same house.
Or their own home.
In many instances. To provide whatever income stream for expenses they might have, including, yes, mortgages of their primary residences. So,
supposedly there are plenty of jobs that people can get out there. You can work two jobs. You can work a full-time job and a part-time job to make ends meet. And that's, you know, we've become, you know, that's, I mean, some people do. But some people do and some people don't. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe the people who don't shouldn't get rental assistance. You know, there's got to be, again, there's never any or very few criteria to who's eligible. And, you know, it's just like a lot of the, you know, the money for the businesses and so forth. How many billions of dollars went to cars and homes and vacations instead of going into the business to keep it, you know, mm-hmm. businesses who really didn't need it got these free loans.
The payroll.
Yeah, it didn't go to payroll. Yeah. And so it's just, and it's all on the taxpayers' dollar on their backs. And then again, these people don't pay that same amount. It's just a messed up situation, and I don't know how you fix it. Because the only way you can fix it is to bring jobs back into this country, but then you have to have the people who want to work, who want to go out and work. And so, I don't know. It's interesting. But again, this is a sign that things can't be fixed and won't be fixed. These problems exist.
It's a government run by many, many interest groups whose interests are very different. it's hard to find a balancing act when you've got a Congress that is beholden to campaign contributions to these special interests. And so policy is going to be skewed in the favor of those who give the most.
Well, the thing of it is, if government would stay out of so many of these various programs, things would be better. Things happen. And, you know, we have to take care of ourselves. And it's
some might say that if only big corporations would stay out of politics.
Exactly. Well, I said yesterday, we don't have a government. Multinational corporations.
The government of
rule the government. Yeah, they're owned by them.
The multinationals.
You know, do they care about us? Absolutely not. So they'll throw you a carrot every now and then just to keep you quiet, keep you fat and happy. But we're easily bought for the most part. Not all of us, but anyway, majority of unemployed men in their 30s have criminal records. More than half of unemployed men in their 30s. And I'm thinking, really? That's a big number. It's a dynamic. It's dynamic with implications for hiring practices and ongoing challenges finding workers. According to a research published by economists at the RAND Corporation, about 6% of men at age 35 are unemployed. By that age, 64% of these jobless males have been arrested as adults. 46% had been convicted of a crime, and 27% had been incarcerated. The study is the first to estimate the prevalence of a criminal record among the unemployed population. Many of these individuals have had difficulty. Here comes the violins, everyone. Applications, I lost my thing there. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I think you do have to account for what kind of crimes these were. Were they, for example, were they possessions of a joint of marijuana underage drinking, way back in the day? I'm not going to say victimless crimes because they often aren't. But, if you're mid-30s and you committed a crime back, in your teen years, for example, I mean, it's just something to be aware of that adds perspective to those numbers. But it is interesting, and it's a paradox because employers are having a hard time finding workers to fill vacancies. And with this so-called great resignation, with 4.5 million people quitting their jobs recently, how many of those now unemployed or then unemployed were these folks who had these records? That does not make sense. It's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. Applicants with criminal records were 60% more likely to get a job callback from employers, even though the records of other applicants may have been a low-level, non-violent crime approximately 2 years earlier. It's a difficult world out there, Melody. I don't know how you make total sense of this, but it is almost a shocking number.
It really is. I mean, what if they do? And usually anything under 18, your records are going to be closed. So they're not going to show evidence. So I would think that most of this is men from 18, above. It's not your young teens that, out and be a little naughty and so forth. But to me, I see it as a lot of the youth, they have it too easy. And I'm thinking of a more, they're not, what job offers are there, of the lower educated folks? I mean, what jobs do they have to go to? There are no more factories anymore. There's no more good paying jobs that they can go
pensions,
to. It's these jobs have been lost. These kids have been given everything. They've given very little responsibility in today's age. And there's no accountability anymore.
Showed up to work on time, Melody. I'm giving you a trophy today.
Yeah. So they've loosened all the standards. It's really, and here we are today. And then you also have almost 2/3 of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. They've been living paycheck for paycheck forever. And it doesn't get any better. And again, they can't get any better. And it gets worse. Those paychecks get smaller and smaller as we see inflation come back in and begins to erode their paychecks. At the end of 2021, 61% of the U.S. population was living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, that's even slightly down from 2020 when nobody worked. So, and again, where is it going to become better? How does it improve?
Higher wages is what seems to be happening. And even that comes with a little bit of a double-edged sword in terms of how it sometimes perpetuates the cycle of rising prices, people earning more, so companies raising prices, which causes upward pressure on wages and so on and so on. But it's affecting people even making six figures. 42% of them said they're living paycheck to paycheck. Americans now say they need to be making about $122,000 a year to feel financially secure. Not sure how that figure was derived, but it's more than double the national average pay, according to a separate report by another financial services firm, Melody.
And wages are not going to increase. We're kind of in like this, I don't know, we're kind of like those little chipmunks or whatever they are, hamsters in that little circle in that cage. And you just keep running and running. You're not going to go anywhere because we don't have the tools to get anywhere. I mean, because we're just in this holding pattern. Wages aren't going to rise. Inflation is going to go up because there aren't any of our problems being addressed. And they haven't been addressed for eons, for decades. They just create the new programs to make everything a little bit better. But they don't fix anything. Now we're at a point where nothing is fixable. There isn't anything that's fixable. How can you fix it? Default on the debt. Well, that's coming. Because that's what will be needed in order to fix and to maybe start afresh if we have the right politicians. But in the meantime, you have to get rid of all the other of their benefits. But it's so again, Dave, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? Home building, that activity continues to surge. The number of new housing units under construction has soared to the highest level in nearly 50 years. I think everybody's getting in there to kind of beat the higher rates. And that's a good thing, right, Dave?
Is it?
A pipeline of new homes could someday help relieve the pressure of rising housing costs? Really? Not when the median home is, what, $350,000, $400,000?
Yeah.
Amazing. I can't believe it, but I hear the music already. We're heading into the next break, and you're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TeamUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients. This final segment, she's at 1-800-375-4188. I don't know if you saw this yesterday. A massive leak of 70 years of data from Credit Suisse, one of the world's biggest private banks, exposed the hidden wealth in over 18,000 of its accounts that collectively hold more than $100 billion. And that a lot of that money, this consortium of newspapers is suggesting, is from very questionable sources and activities. Some of the clients and former clients are accused of torture, drug trafficking, money laundering, corruption in general, and other serious crimes. That's according to the Guardian newspaper. Specifically, there's a Yemeni spy chief implicated in torture, the sons of an Azerbaijani strongman who rules a mountainous territory as his own private fiefdom. And there are bureaucrats accused of looting Venezuela's oil wealth and hastening its descent into a humanitarian crisis, and that's just to name a few. Now, the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project says the Switzerland's draconian banking secrecy laws have made it nearly impossible for other governments or journalists to hold the industry to account. The leak shows that Credit Suisse opened accounts for people whose problematic backgrounds could have been obvious to anyone who ran their names through a search engine. Credit Suisse responded that it rejects the allegations. Matters presented are predominantly historical. These are their words again, in some cases dating back as far as the 1960s. The German newspaper, Süddeutsche Zeitung, received the data anonymously through a secure digital mailbox over a year ago from a source who said that, quote, Swiss banking secrecy laws are immoral, end quote. The leak follows the so-called Panama Papers in 2016, the Paradise Papers a year later, and the Pandora Papers just last year. They all shed lights on the secretive working of banks, law firms, offshore financial service providers. Accounts identified by journalists as potentially problematic held over $8 billion in dubious assets. Compliance experts who reviewed the journalist's findings, and many of these customers should not have been allowed to bank at Credit Suisse at all. Asked why so many of these accounts existed, current and former employees of Credit Suisse described a work culture that, guess, incentivized taking on risk to maximize profits. Sound familiar? That must be one of the essential job duties for working at some too-big-to-fail banks like Credit Suisse and J.P. Morgan Chase, who, as we know, thanks to the work of folks like Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade, has agreed to five felony charges over the past several years. Journalists and experts say Switzerland's draconian bankruptcy secrecy laws effectively silence insiders or even journalists who may want to expose wrongdoing within a Swiss bank. One example they point to, a Swiss media group was even unable to participate in the Swiss secrets investigation due to the risk of criminal prosecution. Now, Bloomberg's Lorkin Roach Kelly says You gotta have some sympathy for central bank policymakers. Today, Roach Kelly noted that it was never going to be easy to end the massive monetary stimulus that had been introduced to ease the economic impact of the pandemic and the recession. Then, just as the world's major central banks had got investors used to the ideas that rates are going to rise, well, quickly in the U.S. and somewhat more slowly in the Eurozone, the latest external shock comes along to complicate matters. Kelly said he's not making any guesses about how things will unfold in Ukraine, but the effects of events so far are clear to see in asset prices, with global benchmark Brent crude on the cusp of $100 a barrel. We mentioned last week some analysts now seeing that going to $120 bucks and north of that even, should there be a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. It's a whole other segment on how that can actually be happening here in the U.S. Now that we're supposedly energy independent. Probably worth spelling out two obvious things here. Higher oil prices are indeed inflationary. More importantly, central bank policy can't increase oil supply or lower prices per barrel. Kelly believes the hottest inflation since the early 80s says the Fed's got to hike, but says it risks damaging the economy while doing little to move external price pressures. There are already signs that traders are starting to change their minds a little about the outlook for monetary policy. Kelly points out these two headlines that crossed his desk this morning. One, traders delay bets on first ECB rate hike in 2022 to December. And another one, rate traders firm odds for Fed cut in 2024 amid Ukraine angst. Yes, that second one's about a Fed rate cut. The Fed and other central banks are definitely going to tighten policy. But they may, due to circumstances beyond their control, be seen by investors to be hiking rates in the near future, only to cut them again later. And that, Kelly warns, risks the effectiveness of hiking at all. It's interesting food for thought, ladies and gentlemen. Let me hear why I shuffle through for this other story. You know what it looks like when Fed Reserve leaders decide to send a concerted signal about their plans? Well, it looks like what took place last Friday. Comments from Fed Governor Lyle Brainard and New York Fed Pres John Williams made clear the Fed intends to raise interest rates only 0.25% at its March meeting, then keep raising them steadily over the rest of the year. The Fed appears committed to moving steadily toward tighter money, not moving so quickly as to shock markets further or the economy unnecessarily. And we know for the past few weeks, with inflation on the up and up, more and more people, traders especially, have been pricing in 0.5% increase in March, something that the Fed hadn't done in 22 years. In fact, James Bullard, St. Louis Fed Pres, endorsed such a move. Some even speculated that the Fed would move on that in an emergency meeting before they meet again, March 15 and 16. Latest comments from Williams and Brainard, in effect, make that official, that it's just going to be 0.25% increase next month. We will see. The comments from two of Chair Powell's top lieutenants appear to be a deliberate effort to steer financial markets away from expecting actions that might seem panicky and thus send the stock markets further into a nosedive. Well, as we like to say here on Financial Survival, we shall see. Now, in October of last year, the Fed announced a list of trading restrictions that it planned to impose on Fed officials on the heels of its own trading scandal, but it made no mention of restricting Fed officials from short selling or making bets on a decline in a stock's future price, or of preventing Fed officials from trading with borrowed funds, known as trading on the margins. But when the Fed published its final rules last Friday, short sales were added to the list of prohibitions. Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade ask in today's newsletter, why do we find that noteworthy? Well, they're wondering whether Robert Kaplan, the former Dallas Fed pres, was shorting the market when he made over $1 million trades in and out of S&P futures. That was in 2020, a year when the S&P 500 dropped by as much as 30% between early January and the end of March. The Dallas Fed declined to answer that question. As the Martins point out, Kaplan was a sophisticated trader who previously worked at Goldman Sachs for 22 years, rising to the rank of vice chair. His financial disclosure form suggests that he maintained a trading relationship with Goldman Sachs while he was at the Fed, which, by the way, has been supervised by the Fed since 2008. The Martins point to three typical reasons for an individual to trade S&P 500 futures. First, the individual thinks he or she can time the market's moves, real risky. Or, secondly, the individual wants to trade before or after stock exchange hours. Well, that's reasonable. Or, the individual wants to make highly leveraged bets on the market's direction, going, you know, either long or short, in some cases both. Kaplan was a voting member of the Fed's Federal Open Market Committee in 2020 when he had access to market-moving information throughout the unprecedented first year of the pandemic. There's no good reason for a person in this, well, semi-public public position to be trading in S&P 500 futures for his own account. None. Drawing further suspicions around Kaplan, he failed to comply with the Fed's official financial disclosure rules to list the dates of his trades. Instead of listing the individual date for each purchase and each sale, he substituted the word multiple. That alone eliminated the ability to detect the short sale, as well as the ability to determine just how many millions of dollars or tens of millions Kaplan had invested in his S&P bets. Now, again, Wall Street on Parade attempted to get Kaplan's trading dates from the Dallas Fed, but they refused. In December, the Martins received a letter from the Fed indicating that, quote, staff searched board records and consulted with knowledgeable staff, but it did not locate any documents responsive to your request. Does that mean Kaplan was operating on his own? Well, Wall Street on Parade wasn't the only news outlet unable to obtain Kaplan's trading dates. Wall Street Journal reported that it too had tried and failed, and even Senator Elizabeth Warren also tried and failed to get them directly from Jerome Powell. Powell's response ignores the fact that Kaplan's trading dates were legally required to be provided on his financial disclosure forms from 2015 through 2020 and weren't. That's public information that Kaplan failed to provide. It's long overdue to the public. Having that information before the Senate votes to confirm Powell for another 4 years as Fed chair would certainly allow the public to decide just how competently or incompetently the Fed has been run under him. Ladies and gentlemen, if Powell is telling the truth and the Fed Board of Governors allowed Kaplan to trade these S&P 500 futures in over $1 million trades for 6 years without ever inquiring about the dates of trade or the exact dollar amounts or whether he was shorting the market, possibly with insider information, certainly, you know, in terms of the Fed anyway, then how in God's name can the Fed be trusted to supervise the largest too-big-to-fail banks on Wall Street? In January of 2021, the Fed Board of Governors announced that it had given a its approval for the reappointment of the presidents of all 12 Fed banks to new five-year terms. And that included Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan. The Fed itself said that the eligible bank directors, with significant input from the Board of Governors and key stakeholders, have conducted a rigorous process to inform their reappointment decisions. Rigorous, really? Well, as the Martins contend, any rigorous process of vetting these bank presidents should have included a review of their trading records. Martin say there's been no word from the Department of Justice or the Securities and Exchange Commission about whether they've opened an investigation into the Fed's trading scandal. They just don't comment on investigations. Powell's publicly stated that he referred the matter to the Fed's own inspector general. Yeah, who reports to the Fed Board of Governors, far from an arm's length investigation. This is the largest trading scandal in the Fed's 109-year history, and yet the public is being kept in the dark as the Senate gets ready to give Powell another 4 years at the helm of the Fed. Until we, the American people, demand better from Congress, this is the form of crony capitalism we will all continue to live under. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.